everyone, and welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking, what are you thinking? And this week, we're going to be thinking and chatting with the incredible Robin Lowe. Robin has been such an incredible guest on the podcast. She wears so many hats in the veterinary profession. She's a veterinary nurse, an educator, an advocate, a writer, and she plays a really prominent part in the management of Veterinary Voices as one of their directors, which is a platform that has become hugely influential in the profession. She also made history by becoming the first RVN trustee on the VetLife board. So much to talk about, so many inspirational stories, and I'm really, really excited for you to hear this conversation. Okay, well, listen, Robin, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. We're really very honoured to have you here with us. And I was struggling a little bit of how to start. I suppose you wear a lot of different hats. Is that fair? I don't know if that's a fair thing to say. I hope it is. But I wonder if you can just start a little bit, you know, regarding kind of the background and your kind of motivations and how you got into veterinary nursing, I think, to begin with. And then that kind of opens up a discussion about all the other bits and bobs.
Oh, yes, you're right, Scott. I think it is fair to say that I wear plenty of hats, and I suppose you'd probably call it balancing a lot of plates. But it's really nice to be on here today, because I think it'll be really reflective for myself to sort of look at the journey that I've been on. So the role to veterinary nursing for me was quite direct. I've been passionate about animals for such a long time. And I suppose that fundamentally that probably started, you know, at the age of 4 or 5, where I started to volunteer for the Horse and Pony Protection Association, with thanks to my mum, who is a nurse who's worked in varied human roles. And just from there, my love of equestrian grew, and I ended up probably in my early teens working for a rescue and rehabilitation yard. And it was there that they worked with a mixture of rescue horses, but also with children and adults with disabilities. And I was privileged enough to meet a surgeon there, whose daughter was also attending. And that sort of really got me thinking about the options for me in terms of veterinary. And it was actually at her practice where I first, you know, saw practice. And it kind of went from there, really.
Mm-hmm. And what was your experience like of kind of that journey to veterinary nursing, your kind of veterinary nursing education? Was that all that you thought it was going to be? Did that live up to your kind of expectation?
Yeah, you know, there's very varied routes, and I was lucky enough to have very, very good grades as a youngster, and you know, my school was a really positive influence on me as well. And So I kind of went with the route of, you know, the GCSEs, the A levels, and then the degree. And I have to say, you know, it was a time that I really enjoyed. At the time that I was doing my degree, I actually didn't live in university accommodation. I had a house, so I was, you know, having to sort of pay towards that. So it wasn't quite the traditional university party route. You know, I had to go to work after university to make sure I could keep on paying the bills and things like that. But at the same time, I had a lot of family support, and it was just a thoroughly enjoyable time, and I really enjoyed the degree that I did. And I suppose that follows up with what I decided to do later in my educational journey, which was I've done my advanced diploma now in surgery, medicine and anaesthesia. And then I went on to do my Bachelor of Science in clinical veterinary nursing as well. So I do enjoy learning. I have to say it's something that I enjoy participating in.
Yeah, and I won't ask how old you are, but it would seem you're not as old as those accolades would make you think you should be to have done. I can't believe that list of things. Like, I was reading about your multiple advanced diplomas, and a further, you know, further degree, and obviously you did the veterinary nursing degree. I mean, that's a shift, we would say, you know, that's a shift. And actually, funnily enough, Karen, who I was saying produces the podcast and who's here with us, she's gone back to university as a older person and actually understands that responsibility of having to pay the bills. not that I was saying you're old when you started, but paying the bills and doing university at the same time, right, Karen?
Right. Gosh, yeah. But I'm a really good student now.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I think as you get older, you become a better student. That's definitely true. So I suppose that's, you know, taking it back to that moment where you've kind of, you know, graduated as a veterinary nurse. I mean, you obviously have gone on to do sort of multiple other things, as many of us feel at that point, whether you've done any part of the veterinary sort of family, you know, you qualify and you, I mean, often are not quite sure what the heck you're going to do. I mean, did you have a sort of clear vision of what your actual career was going to look like at that early stage? Were you kind of hyper focused on this goal to do all of those further qualifications?
It's interesting because, you know, for me, up until the point I graduated, life was just, you know, becoming a registered veterinary nurse. And to me, all I had ever seen was clinical nursing. So, you know, those clinical qualifications that I got afterwards were because I wanted to progress myself. But actually, you know, all these extra things that I've done afterwards, which, you know, we'll come on to, I had never seen myself doing it. And actually, you know, I'm probably not the most confident person. Whereas when people, you know, see what I do, they say, oh, you know, this is not a reflection of what I think of myself, but they say, you're a superwoman, or how do you do all this stuff? And actually, it was off the back of basically just before I started my advanced diploma, I became pregnant. And actually, what I decided to do, everybody said that, you know, you're not going to be able to do another 3 years of university with a baby. But I thought, I can do this. And so I sat my exams, my first year exams, at 38 weeks pregnant, praying that I didn't go into labor at any time, and then did the rest of it with a young baby. And the problem afterwards is that your work becomes very difficult. You know, like, usually shifts are long, and it's not really always compatible with being a parent. So I started to sort of have to try and diversify out, and I started to gain an interest in loads of little things. But also, I started volunteering for the likes of Canine Arthritis Management. And if I'm honest with you, it's because I found maternity leave very isolating, and also almost unstimulating. It sounds horrible, but It was very challenging for me to be just a mother and lose that drive that I had seen was coming in the future. You know, I'd had all these ideas about all these qualifications and where I was going to end up. So actually, I really liked having something that wasn't just me as a mum sat on my own, you know, with a baby all night. And I'd ended up, you know, volunteering for Canine Arthritis Management, and then that kind of spiraled into many other things that have come in my future as well.
And you know, we'll talk a little bit, like you said, about kind of some of your other roles, but through kind of all of this, you've clearly gained a very strong voice for kind of evidence-based veterinary medicine, and really pushing you know, the voice, I think, of veterinary nurses in that kind of arena. Do you want to talk a little bit about kind of your, how you've kind of developed that voice, and how you've been such an advocate for evidence-based veterinary medicine?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of it does stem from that time volunteering. So when I started with Canine Arthritis Management as a volunteer, I just offered to, you know, a helping hand where I could. And what I realized was that on the owner forums, there was a huge amount of misinformation. And, you know, over the years, chronic pain and osteoarthritis management has been a real passion of mine, amongst, you know, many other things. But a deep frustration for me was seeing misinformation sort of supported by other sort of areas of misinformation, because people were left and misunderstanding what they're seeing, or they didn't seem to understand the evidence base. And I don't feel that I fully have got proficient in, you know, being able to critically analyze data until much later on in my career. So, you know, how can we expect owners to be able to do that? But, you know, what I essentially found after, you know, many sort of months of trying to manage these answers of owners, where I sort of went, that's a really interesting take, but actually that might not be 100% right. And, you know, trying to steer them compassionately and in a non-judgmental way to like the good quality evidence base. And I kind of found out that I was actually fairly good at getting literature bases and scouring them and then making smaller sort of blogs or posts or information pieces that is just a little bit more accessible to the general population or the public, or, you know, the pet owning population. And then from there, it's kind of spiraled, because obviously I don't really volunteer for canine arthritis management now. But, you know, along the way, I took on Veterinary Voices UK. I took on their public facing platforms. And it's kind of exploded from there. You know, we've got articles out that, you know, 2,000 plus people have read. And, you know, it's nice to see that. But it took a little bit of time to get there, you know, of understanding my own barriers and biases as well.
I love that. You know, that's, isn't that, that your own kind of unconscious bias, which we definitely all have a lot of the time. You know, that's something you really have to kind of become conscious of, isn't it? Like that kind of thing. It's so, it's crazy, isn't it? And I think particularly, you know, I find myself, that's like a real skill with pet owners, pet carers, you know, being able to really meet them at sort of the most neutral place, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's one of the things that I've really found most challenging over the years, but is most important to kind of having the most honest kind of conversation about anything, really. I will come on to talk about Veterinary Voices, obviously. but I wonder what, you know, through the writing that you've done, what would you say is the most impactful thing that you've ever written?
Oh, that's a really challenging one. You know, over the years, I've produced sort of peer-reviewed stuff. And I suppose that's kind of guided me into a bit of a niche, which is probably looking at sort of, you know, misinformation in osteoarthritis. And I suppose one of the biggest areas is the supplements world. And I think that maybe I could argue that's the most impactful, because, you know, there's a huge population of osteoarthritic pets, but also because there's such a huge supplement industry and lots of misinformation. So perhaps that's the area, you know, that I feel is most impactful. But, you know, if you look at reading numbers, you know, the articles on monoclonal antibodies and anti-nerve growth factor, you know, that's a real popular one. But I think overall, you know, the ones that are most impactful are the ones that hit with either the public or the profession. And actually, you know, from feedback from the community at Vet Voices UK and Veterinary Voices UK, I think that people sort of trust that when I produce something, I've put a lot of thought into it, and I'm doing it because I recognize there's a need within the community. So, you know, when there was the XL bully legislation, you know, I would try and keep up with that and sort of support people. Or if there is, you know, information coming out about Brucella canis, you know, I'll try and inform myself as much as I can about that, so that I can try and sort of reduce the fears, or try and help people have evidence-based protocols and, you know, not panic about things. Or, you know, as with the monoclonal antibody thing, it's like, you know, you could see that there was, from many years ago, you could see that there was that growing fear, especially within the pet-only, you know, population. But then when you as a veterinary professional get asked about it, you know, how on earth can we be expected to keep up with all of the changes in veterinary medicine at the moment? Like it's almost unobtainable to think that you can do that. So what I try and do is just make life that little bit easier for hardworking veterinary professionals who struggle with time and just need something condensed down. So I think it's that was a really long-winded answer to say I don't think I could put a name on which has been the most impactful, because I think for individuals, different ones have been helpful at different times to them. And there's probably stuff that I've produced that's absolutely rubbish and, you know, hasn't helped anyone. But
No,
you know,
no, and I don't think so. I mean, I, you know, any of the stuff that I've read of yours, certainly, I'm immediately struck by the amount of time and effort that must go into creating these sorts of peer review, you know, these kind of documents that kind of review the literature, and I, you know, I'm always amazed by that. I think it's amazing. I don't. I mean, the next thing I'm going to say is not meant. It's meant to be. I hope it doesn't come across the wrong way. I think, you know, in the veterinary world, we're probably less used to, and this is not necessarily a good thing, you know, less used to veterinary nurses having the kind of voice maybe that you do in this kind of area. And I think that'll be very, very inspiring for so many people, and I know that to be true. But do you find, have you found it, do you think, challenging to kind of forge your way, particularly with your veterinary nurse hat on, in this kind of area, and doing something actually that is not something that everyone does? You know, has that been a challenge, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think there's certainly been some barriers to a nurse having, you know, that place on the table, I suppose you'd call it. And you know, it's thanks to me grabbing onto other people's coattails sometimes to try and get through that door. You know, there's been surgeons and nurses along the way who, you know, have essentially held the door open for me and helped me into that space. And then once I'm in there, you know, it kind of explodes and you can just carry on making that mark that you're trying to make. But, you know, I can't say that I've done it on my own, although it probably is a lot of stubborn perseverance on my part as well. But you know, it's a community. The community's helped me get here, because, you know, without all these people supporting me along the way, I probably wouldn't have had the opportunities that I have. And I'd hope that now, you know, when people ask me to link them up with connections, I feel kind of like very much like that is what you should do within the community, because it gives the next person the opportunity to voice something that's important to them. So there certainly has been barriers, and, you know, just the typical ones that, you know, everybody seems to experience is, you know, like the biases, or the, you know, sometimes the sexism, sometimes the age thing. You know, thank you for saying that I didn't look as old as I am. I feel about 100. But it's, you know, but I think that, you know, it's actually been generally positive. You know, the barriers have just been like bureaucracy things. The positives have been the community helping me get to where I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talking about where you are, we have to talk about veterinary voices and your role with veterinary voices. I think it would be useful to, if you don't mind, just explaining a little bit about what veterinary voices is and your role within that organization, if that's okay, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm one of a few directors at Veterinary Voices UK, and I suppose it's fair to say that I'm probably the main operational person within it. But there's a couple of there's a gorgeous history to Vet Voices, and one, you know, that I couldn't go without saying, that actually I was nothing to do with the founding of the platform originally. So Danny Chambers, a very good friend of mine who is a veterinary surgeon and now a member of parliament, many years ago, he and Sarah Brown wanted to run for RCVS council because they recognised perhaps that there was a bit of a dissonance between the RCVS and the profession, the people, and the communication just wasn't there, and they wanted to change that. So they set it up originally as a campaign to become, you know, our CVS counsellors, and you know they were successful. But sadly, Sarah lost her life to suicide, and that drove Danny onto many things, you know, to keep Veterinary Voices open as a supportive community for the jokes, the laughter, the clinical support, you know, the sort of political side of it, you know, as we've seen over the years, you know, politics and veterinary are intertwined, whether it's the XL bully legislation or DEFRA or, you know, the CMA, you know, it's intertwined. So it's a place where people can discuss those kind of things. And then, you know, I think it was probably, it was the pandemic. So I got, you know, whenever that was, 2020, a horrendous time. I try and forget it. But, you know, I had lost a friend very recently to suicide, and the community had been very supportive of me as well through that time. You know, I posted about very conflicting feelings that I was, you know, one of the last people to call, you know, the crisis team and things like that, and, you know, blaming myself, as you often do. And actually I posted that, and so many people sort of wrapped their arms, you know, metaphorical arms around me and said, like, that's not the case. And by this time I wasn't part of vet life at all. So, you know, I actually wasn't massively in the mental health, wellness and mental health sort of charity space. But Danny, during the pandemic, ran a pantomime with Veterinary Voices UK. It was completely silly. It was for Vet Life. It was to cheer up the community. And at first he invited me on as a writer because I was just sort of saying, you know, silly things. But then somehow I ended up as Aladdin. So, you know, it's just, you know, he likes to like try and tease you in that you wouldn't be on camera, and then suddenly you're Aladdin. So, you know, and then from there, it just exploded.
I can see you as Aladdin. I've never seen that, but I can really see, actually, you're very, I think you'd be good as Aladdin, I feel, just having spent some time with you.
Yeah. And you know what as well? I've got a really small dog who was also, is the monkey called a Boo or something? Or
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the little dog was there, and it was completely ridiculous. And it was just for Vet Life charity and to try and just cheer up the community who were having a horrendous, horrendous time, as, you know, as everyone else was in the pandemic. And you know, from there, Veterinary Voices is just, it's just crazy. So essentially, to try and summarise, it's a closed community for RCVS only members. Then the offshoot to that is like the community where, you know, there's just all kinds. There's veterinary discussion, clinical support, you know, all the kind of chat that you would expect. And then there's also the EMS group, the student group, the Veterinary Voices hiking group, which I'd love to chat about at some point. And then obviously the public facing platform as well. And, you know, most of the management of all of the management of the public facing is down to stuff that I'm popping out there just to try and help support the veterinary community and owners. And, you know, we have the website as well. And we have our own podcast, you know, just to chat about things as well. So it's kind of, you know, There's many things going on. It's very fun. It's very fast. It's very volatile at times, you know, as the profession often is. But it's very enjoyable to have that sense of community as well.
Mm. I think I love the story of how all of this came to be. Obviously, I think there's all real sadness there, but that, you know, then a real joy in kind of the product that we have now. You know, that's a great thing, I suppose. And I suppose a lot of great things come out of sadness, don't they? You know, in some sort of funny roundabout way. You know, I think you touched on the point there that I think is a really interesting one, because we are talking about a sort of social media platform, and social media can also be many different things, from kind of the good and the bad and sort of all the fast-paced bits in between, I think you said, or something like that. What do you find the most challenging thing about kind of managing these groups? And I think particularly probably the private veterinary group, you know, where you know, you're dealing with veterinary professionals, but I'm correct me if I'm wrong, you are involved in kind of moderating that discussion. So what would you say is the most challenging part of that role in keeping veterinary professionals keeping veterinary professionals in check?
In check, yeah, I love that. You know, it's fascinating because, you know, when I started this, you know, you had certain expectations of, you know, online behavior. And then, you know, because of a mix of so many things, you know, emotions and human psychology, I've learned so much about human psychology since starting this journey. And I think that's been one of the most helpful things, is to understand why people react the way they do. You know, when you read things like the chimp paradox, and now, you know, when I see certain responses, I'm like, oh, it's their limbic system. It's just the chimp. Like, I can manage this. You have to get the chimp back in his box. You know, like, it's fascinating. And it's hard. And the reason it's hard is because, you know, in veterinary medicine, in medicine, in life in general, you are allowed to disagree. But what we say is that you disagree professionally and politely. And obviously, sometimes when emotion comes into it, or tiredness, or online communications, which, you know, we very well know that communication, like, I think that I'm probably quite a blunt texter. So perhaps I wonder that, you know, if I don't put thought into my messages, which I have to when I'm replying, I actually come across very, like, cutthroat. So actually, when I do have to, you know, pull up discussion, what I often do is have those big reflective pieces that you probably see quite a lot, where I say, you know, I've recognized that this is happening within the profession. So, you know, it comes back to all these big topics. It's the things that really upset people. It's the XL bully legislation. It's, you know, it's a change to the flea and worm prescriptions, because, you know, suddenly someone decides that you're not allowed to change it without seeing the dog ever, and things like that. And it's things that really rile you up, and because you're a hardworking veterinary professional. And so, you know, often I have to do these reflective pieces where I have to sort of look from both sides and say, you know, you have to validate the feelings, you have to call out inappropriate behavior. But, you know, it's hard because, you know, what's my line of appropriateness might not be what other people are experiencing. You know, some people, you know, might not think that certain things are appropriate, whereas other people will. And obviously you do see that, don't you? Because you see it when we're talking about things like the BVA microaggression campaign. And there was a lot of people who said, oh, well, I'm not offended by that. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course you're not, because you've not got lived experience of being poked every day by these little things. And, you know, I'm a white British person, so I've not been poked by them either. But if I try and just think with somebody else's shoes on for once, you know, I can be reflective about that. So it's fascinating. But what it boils down to is communication, fairness, you know, not letting bad behavior slide, having conversations and being as balanced as we can. And, you know, overall, the group, you can tell when they're stressed, like, you can tell when big things are happening, because people's responses get blunter. And then when there's, like, you know, when there's calmness, it's much, you know, it's much easier. But it's still enjoyable, because they're human beings who are having very human reactions. You know, you think that because you're a veterinary professional, you're beyond normal human response, but nobody's above that, especially when there's huge pressures on the profession, mm-hmm. which there are at the moment.
And actually, I think, you know, a lot of the time, you know, a lot of these responses and reactions are coming from the fact that, you know, people just care about something very sort of deeply, you know. And I think that, you know, sometimes that emotion, or, you know, that reaction just becomes, no, I don't want to say misguided, but, you know, the energy just flows, doesn't it? And then it can flow in lots of different directions. But that's often, you know, when I'm reading responses or aware of different disagreements in these kind of forums, I think that often it's just energy that comes from kind of passion, you know. But I don't envy your job of kind of being part of the moderation of some of the discussion. I suppose it's a difficult line, like you say, to toe. And I think that's, I think you said something about chimpanzees. I must go and read about that. So I'll.
Oh, it's great. It's called the chimp paradox. Okay. It's a fascinating book, and it's just about, you know, the different areas of your brain and how they react to the perceived threat. Yeah. But it's fascinating because it sort of really teaches you, you know, why you've responded in a certain way to something or why somebody else has, yeah. And it helps you sort of rationalize that. So it's amazing.
What's your proudest moment being involved, do you think, in the Veterinary Voices forum? What would you say your proudest moment has been?
Oh, that's another hard question where I feel like I'm probably not going to give you a straight answer, but I think that the Veterinary Voices hiking group, it's something that I'm very proud of, but it's also something that does such huge good that I think that, you know, that little offshoot, you know, that's sort of grown and grown over the years is something that I can confidently say I'm very proud of, because it's done such great good in terms of on an individual level, you know, just getting people out in the outdoors for physical and mental health, but also it's raised a huge amount of money for Vet Life. But also, you know, like the wider implications of, I suppose they're not implications, the wider benefits of people meeting other people to become friends and connections and support networks. And, you know, I don't know what it is about them, but, you know, we often have people come on who they come alone or maybe in pairs with a friend, but they're experiencing like some serious life hurdles. And somehow these people who have never met before just sweep them up and care for them and then continue to care for them. And I think that is such a beautiful thing to see happening in front of you as well.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it's, I think, such a, in many ways, a simple thing, isn't it? Walking or hiking, but I think is certainly brings out the best in people. You know, it's such a simple thing, but such a great thing. So I love that. Talking about kind of things that do good. Is that terrible? Like, Karen, that's terrible. Oh, there's a Wicked reference there. I won't go into that. You made history as the first RVN trustee on the VetLife board. Is that right? Have I said that right?
Yeah, no, you are correct there. I mean, there's a little bit of a loophole. Okay. Where there is a veterinary surgeon who was on the board a number of years ago who started her career off as an RVN, but she wasn't allowed to join until she was a surgeon. And the reason that I was able to join was because of a change in the articles of the charity. And as soon as they changed those articles to say that RVNs could become members of the board, I applied and was the first RVN in the history of the charity to sit there. So that's another incredible proud
amazing
moment.
And what does that moment mean for you kind of personally, and then I suppose to the wider veterinary community or the veterinary nursing community particularly?
Yeah, you're right. And you know, it's things like you're seeing it more and more. So, you know, nurses are starting to speak at SPIVs. So, you know, the Society of Practicing Veterinary Surgeons, you know, somewhere that would have been wholeheartedly veterinary surgeon dominated. You know, nurses are starting to get into these places where they really need to be. But the thing with Vet Life is, you know, back when it started as the, you know, I might absolutely ruin the history of it here, but it was the Veterinary Benevolent Fund, you know, back in the Victorian times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the point of it was to support veterinary surgeons and then their widows. So you can imagine, you know, the people that they were that sort of looking after. And then over the years, it's grown and it's changed. And now it looks after, you know, veterinary surgeons, veterinary nurses. The helpline is available to anybody in the veterinary community, so receptionists or VCAs or anyone. So the fact that there is a RVN sitting at that table, able to communicate the needs of the nursing profession or the barriers of the nursing profession, is amazing. But you know, one of the things that I found, or you know, I'm still finding, is that all of the mental health and suicide research is based on veterinary surgeons. So you know, you constantly hear that, you know, veterinary surgeons are four times more likely than the general population to die by suicide. But what about nurses? And we don't have that data. And I kind of wonder why do we not have that data? And thankfully, that's changing now, because PhD students such as my friend and previous trustee James Glass is now looking into that. And I'm thankful that those things are changing now. But to have a nurse on the board just signifies that there's somebody at that table able to represent that area of the profession.
No, it's amazing. Amazing. The Veterinary Benevolent Fund, that doesn't sound as snappy, does it? That's not... That's a rubbish name. No, I'm joking. You've mentioned a lot of really interesting people through your kind of conversation, but I wonder, reflecting back on your sort of career, I wonder if you can share with us who is particularly inspirational to you.
Oh, there's so many names. There's so many names, but I will try and mention as many as I can, because I feel that they ought to have some mention in the support of my career over the years. So, you know, starting from university, I had a group of veterinary surgeons who really supported me through university. And, you know, without their help, university would have been a real struggle, because, you know, I was working with them on the weekends and in the evenings, and they were supporting me with cases. But then moving forward, you know, Danny Chambers, I've already mentioned, you know, he was instrumental in me starting to support Veterinary Voices UK. Hannah Capon, of course, you know, with canine arthritis management. My co-founder of the hiking group, Paul Horwood, you know, he's a farm vet. He also sits as a trustee at VetLife and is the honorary treasurer. And, you know, he's got a very portfolio career as well. But, you know, without his guidance with the Veterinary Voices Hiking Group, it probably wouldn't be what it was. But we're very, very different people. So he's ex-military, ex-marine, and is very confident in leading and navigating. Whereas I'm good at navigating, but it's the organization and the community and the rallying of the community that I'm really good at. So that's what I enjoy there. And then there's people who have just, you know, like Professor John Innes, you know, I've got to call him Professor, because, you know, like, he was one of the first people that I spoke with at BVA Live about osteoarthritis. And, you know, I think I've said this before in a podcast previously, but it was like one of these 50-minute long talks. And I was convinced that I was like the, you know, like this little person that maybe would get like the 5 minutes at the end, because I was just the token RVN. And it was John Innes, you know, like, he was the headliner. And actually how it worked out was, he said, no, you know, Robin, I need 10 minutes. You do the rest. Like, you take it from here. And, you know, for him, you know, that was probably didn't mean anything. But to me, he handed over the stage to somebody who had not had the opportunity very often to be up there representing RVNs in terms of the, you know, the management and how instrumental we are to the management of osteoarthritis as well. But, you know, the people who supported them, they're countless, you know, hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. I think, I love that story about John. He's a nice guy, isn't he? He's a good guy. That's good. Yeah. That's a really, really, I love that, actually. I really, really love that. So, you know, if, again, you know, you seem to have crammed a lot in. I think you must have invested in some sort of cryogenic anti-aging something. I don't know what. But anyway, so you're 104 and you've done a lot in your long life. can you imagine? That was really like, you've heard it here first. She's actually ancient and no one knows. So you've crammed a lot in. Do you think, would you have done it any differently? I mean, would you have constructed this whole thing, this whole master plan? Would that master plan have been a different one if you could do it all again?
It's an interesting question, that, because, you know, I feel like this wasn't a master plan. You know, everything that started to happen happened because I kind of just decided to say yes to opportunities, even if I was so scared that, you know, it made my stomach hurt. You know, like many of the talks that I used to do, I was an absolute mess before I started them. You know, I am definitely not this like swan that glides through veterinary doing amazing work and not, like, my life is chaos. Everything that happened was because I just took the opportunity, jumped at it. You know, when people say it was like riding a bike, but the bike's on fire and there's a bear chasing you, like that was my life. It's just crazy. And, you know, I don't think I could do it any different, because everything has happened so randomly, by complete, you know, things have just happened because I've been offered the opportunity and I've said yes, basically. And I don't think I could have instrumented it every time I did this. If I did this lifetime again, something different would happen, you know. And things have fallen through. Like, there's been massive disappointments in my life. You know, I was booked to go and work in Asia because I'd already gone to work at a charity supporting elephants and the street dogs. And I'd booked to go back. And obviously, this is at the same time that I got pregnant. And I ended up deciding that, you know, trying to run fast at 20 weeks pregnant with an elephant wasn't going to work. And that was a big disappointment, you know, but it's one of those things.
Just so many spoilers here, like, you know, don't run with elephants when pregnant,
don't do it.
Like, and actually the biggest spoiler is that you're not this perfectly curated swan who's perfectly in control of everything at all times. So I think people will be surprised and pleased to hear that all at once. Your ducks, I mean, I think that thing about, you know, your ducks never, what's that thing, you know, your ducks are never in a row. In fact, I've never really seen my ducks or met my ducks, or I've not seen them for a while or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the idea, I think. And I think probably most of us feel like that, definitely, most of the time. What would you say is the moment that the veterinary profession has made you feel most proud?
Oh gosh, you know, you ask these questions at like black and white answers, and I cannot give a black
and white
answer.
Oh, you don't have to. No, you don't have to. You can.
That's so challenging. The most proud.
You know, one of those kind of moments where you just feel filled up by the community. You know, where you're like, oh yeah, we got that. You know, we did that. We did a good thing, or we got that right, or they did a good thing. You know, that sort of feeling.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, I've started to see these things online where I don't know if it's like a psychology thing or something else, but it's this sort of theory where if you're waiting for, you know, like that ray of sunshine, like you're going to be always disappointed, and you've got to start looking for like the glimmers in like everyday life. And I think that probably I don't think I could pinpoint a certain moment in my career where I was like this, you know, it was like radiating out of me and a halo was like coming over the veterinary profession. Like, I think it's these glimmers where you just get, you know, you get somebody who's like a sole charge vet and they message at 3 a.m. because, you know, they're scared out of their mind because something they've never tackled's come down. And then I wake up at 5 a.m. and I see that, you know, five people have already messaged. Like, that that fills my heart with so much happiness to know that people aren't alone. And we do anonymous posting, and the replies that you get back from that to say, like, just thank goodness that that is available, that community support is available. And I'm going to struggle to say a specific thing, but in all honesty, those glimmers happen quite a lot. Just things where you've made a difference to that person that day, and that's probably enough. Those big things, those big acts of amazingness, probably don't happen as often as you think, but the little things quite
No, I love
continually.
that. And then just finally, what do you want to be when you grow up?
What do I want to be? I don't know. That's this is a this is a thing. I've moved recently into a role where I can do a lot of education around sort of orthopedics, and I'd love to be involved in research, but again, that's one of those things where the barriers are, like, they're just there. So to be able to get into research, often you need to have a master's. And master's is one of those big investments that I want to do, but at the moment life is just so busy. So maybe one day when I grow up, I'll be able to get that master's, and maybe I'll be able to get that PhD. But at the moment, I think we've just got to be happy with the juggling that's happening, and proud of proud of the community, because they deal with a lot. The veterinary community deals with a lot, so you've just got to be proud of the people within it, and hope that they continue to do the excellent work that they do.
I love that. Let's finish with that. Let's leave that there. What a joy to speak to you. I have no doubt that you will achieve the master's and the PhD. I think it's just finding the time. You're absolutely right, is the main barrier to these sorts of things. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
So a massive thank you to Robin for joining us on the podcast today. We're so grateful for her chatting to us, and I just really loved that conversation. So thank you so, so much. So grateful to all of you for listening. We forget that you do in the best possible way, and we're so thankful for your support. Please do join us on the next episode of the podcast, where we'll be having one of our clinical episodes. So do tune in for that. And as always, let us know if there's topics you would like to hear covered on the podcast, and people you'd like to hear us chat to. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. So massive thank you again to Robin. Massive thank you again to you. And we look forward to seeing you next time.